Hey guys, we're back. Eat, Sleep, Archery. This is Ross coming at you from Desert Archery. I got a special guest today, a good friend of mine, Brad. We're going to talk some target archery today, and we might talk some other stuff too.
It's hard to shut me up, so we'll talk about whatever you want to talk about.
How's it going, Brad?
Good, good, Ross. I'm happy to be here. I got to say, I'm a big podcast fan. When I heard about the podcast, I was actually pretty excited. I thought this was a great idea. I think it drives more awareness to the sport. I feel like people need to know certain things about archery before they go out and drop a bunch of coin and right. convince their wives that they're about to spend, you know, $500,000, $1,500 on, on something like this, a quote-unquote toy in some people's eyes. So if this can answer some questions, maybe kind of pique some interest, I think it's perfect. Exactly what we need.
Yeah, we can talk about how Brad shoots a 299 game in his backyard.
So I'll tell you how I got into target archery. It's a funny story. I've had bows my whole life. I've hunted over the counter. I've hunted, you know, I mean, javelina. I've always had a bow. My cousin Brandon actually got me into shooting bows when I was like 9 or 10 years old. My family's, my brothers have shot. But specifically, about 6 or 7 years ago, Corbin and I were driving my wife across town. We were on Airway, mm-hmm. and she said, let's go to the bow shop. That caught me off guard because I've owned a bow. I've shot. Why is my wife asking about a bow?
And she didn't shoot.
She didn't shoot. She didn't own a bow at all. So we swung in, said hi to Stuart, said, we're actually here for my wife. I already own a bow. She wants to try the sport out. So he put a Hoyt Ignite in her hand. She shot that 10-yard bell he had set up on his range. Uh-huh. We walked out of there, actually bought her a whole new rig. And then, of course, if your wife's going to buy a bow, I feel like that's green light to buy a bow. So I ran home, got my own bow, came back, traded in, which, like Desert Archery, they traded in, mm-hmm. which not a lot of shops do that. So we left with two bows that day, and we started shooting a lot. And then I realized I had kind of fallen out of the habit of shooting all the time and enjoying the sport of archery, because I knew I loved it as a kid, but I didn't necessarily. Life happens, man. You have kids, you get married, you get a job, you get busy, and then you realize you haven't touched your bow in 6 months.
Right.
And you turn around and it's, man, I didn't hunt pigs last year. You know, I just got too busy. So I kind of re-fell in love with it about 6 years ago, and I started shooting a lot. And I wore out a couple targets in the backyard, went out and spent some money on like a commercial grade target mm-hmm. bale, put one in the backyard. And I remember I was shooting with Stuart at his league on Tuesday nights, and I had a Hoyt Charger, and I shot a 297. And that night, I bought into the lie that if I can shoot a 297 with a hunting bow, I should be able to slap bars on this thing and a scope and shoot a 300 easy peasy.
Right.
You know, like, it's all I got to do. I just got to go out and buy the stuff, and I'll be a 300 class shooter. So that's a lie. That's not how that works at all. So I went out and I bought a used Energy 35. I set it up as a target bow. Now, when I say target bow, meaning long axle to axle, usually, you know, over 35 inches would be considered a smaller target bow. 30-inch front bar, 12 to 15-inch back bar, and magnification in your sight. Mm-hmm. Some guys shoot big arrows, some guys don't. But a traditional target archery setup usually runs for indoor a 27/64 arrow, so it's big.
Right.
That's the maximum diameter arrow you can shoot for target archery. So I bought all of the things, spent more money than I should have, and I started shooting, and my scores plummeted. I shot, couldn't get out of the 280s to save my life. And I was like, what in the world? I just shot a 297 like a month ago.
Right.
Now I can't get above 285. What is wrong? And I can't tell you where I heard this, and I can't tell you who said it, but I remember hearing this, that a target bow will magnify the strong parts of your shot, and it will magnify the terrible habits that you have. Mm-hmm. And so that's the truth of the matter. So I realized I did not pay attention to my stance, my shoulders, my bow arm. I didn't pay attention to my anchor point. There were so many things in my shot process that were not consistent. So when you handed me a bow that weighed 3 more pounds than an average hunting setup, and it was a lot heavier, and then you got this big old giant bar out front. Yeah, you got this bulk, and you realize this is a lot harder than it looks.
Right.
And so that's when I realized I need to spend some time with this bow. Mm-hmm. So I need if I'm going to drive those scores back up to the 290s, it took me probably a year before I was back up to the 290s. And then the other thing I figured out is that there is a world of difference between a 290 class shooter and a 299 class shooter. So if you're listening to this and you're like, I don't know what he's talking about, a 300 is a perfect game, right? That means you've hit the 10 30 times in a row. If you're really paying attention, the X-ring, which is the size of a dime inside the 10, is, you know, a perfect game would be a 300 with 30 X's.
Right.
That's the coup de grace. That's the ultimate, I mean, high score. I've never shot that. That's what I'm after. That's in the level of archery I'm shooting right now. I'm not necessarily shooting after a 300. I would like to shoot a 300 with 30 X's.
Right.
You listen to the pros, these guys that are phenomenal, like Levi Morgan, Real Wild, Jesse Broadwater. I listened to a podcast with Levi Morgan. He said getting ready for Vegas a couple years ago, he was so excited. He'd never been this excited for Vegas. And the guy has shot at Vegas, I don't know how many years in a row.
It's a bunch.
A ton of times. He said that he had never been more excited because he had shot, I want to say it was either over 12 or 13 300 30Xs in a row.
In a row?
In a row. So the guy never went outside of the X ring, and he was super stoked about Vegas. I heard him say that, and I thought, I've never shot a 330X, and this guy just shot over a dozen of these rounds in a row.
Right.
So the guy's got a pretty solid shot. That's the level of precision that I think I wanted to try to go after. So that's where target archery started for me. Like, okay, I'm not – if your goal is I want to hit a paper plate at 30 yards and go deer hunt, perfect. But if you want to get same hole accuracy,
right?
How do I do that? Then that's where target archery comes into play. The long bars, the fat arrows, the magnification in the sight, it's not going to make you a magical 300 class shooter. It will help pick up a point or two average. You know, I ain't going to lie. When I shoot a little teeny X10 arrow and it hits just outside the X ring, I'm thinking, that would be an X if I was shooting some 27s.
Oh, yeah.
But realistically, over the course of a game, that doesn't happen that often.
It doesn't happen.
No, no. You'll pick up a few points, but you're not going to make up a total difference overall because you either have a good shot and a good shot execution that's consistent and it's repeatable and you can do the exact same thing or close to it as much as possible. You're going to hear guys say that it's impossible to make the exact shot over and over, and that's true. That's true to a degree. However, if you don't have the same footing, the same shoulder stance, if you don't draw the bow the same way, if you don't have a repeatable grip pressure, if you're not looking through the peep sight the same exact way, and you're not executing the shot, meaning you're not pulling all the way through and having a clean break every single time, you're never going to be close to a 330X.
Right.
Ever. So I have a paper at my house. I've shot with 28X 300, and that is an all-time high for me. That's my glass ceiling. I can't seem to break through it yet. That's my goal. Whether or not I'm capable of doing that, you know, because we're back to life and I have a job and I don't get paid to shoot a couple hours a day.
Right.
So I have to function. My kids have to eat. So I would love to. However, if I get to pick up my bow and shoot a game in the morning and a game at night, and if that keeps me in the 20X respectable 299, 298 game, great. That's what I'm going for. But ultimately, that's the goal. That's where I want to go. So when people come pick my brain and say, Brad, I want to shoot a 300. I want to buy all these things, put it on my bow, and I want to shoot the best game ever. And I'll tell them point blank, whoa, whoa, whoa.
Right.
What are we doing?
Right.
Like, you're about to spend a lot of money, and you're about to be really frustrated. Like, I went through that experience thinking that was just going to fix everything, and that's not how it went.
Right.
At all. First of all, do you love shooting? And if you love shooting, okay, then let's progress from there. Let's bulletproof your shot. Let's make you repeatable. Let's let you enjoy the sport, and then we'll start adding these extra tools, you know, stabilizers, magnification. I ain't going to lie. Like, it's a whole lot nicer when I look through a 6X lens with my scope, and I can see clearly that 10 ring.
Oh, yeah.
That's great. It's a comforting feeling. However, the first time you realize that you can't get your pin in the middle because you can see it so well, and you realize you've got bit by the target panic bug, then that's hard.
Yeah.
Because I'll tell you, as a person who has broken into the 290s and shot at my first 300 I was shooting was actually down at Stewart's. I was so nervous I could hardly hold my release. And I remember Dan, who shoots in league, was there, And him and I were talking about that, and I'm like, this isn't for money. I actually paid to be here. Nobody's sponsoring me. I am not a pro. But I was so nervous I could hardly handle it. And I remember thinking, it's just another X. You should. Anybody can pick up a bow and shoot an arrow right in the middle.
Right.
But nobody can pick up a bow and shoot 30 of those
uh-huh.
in a row.
Right.
Without any mistakes.
Uh-huh.
So the first time I did that, I was super nervous. And so I remember, like, I was like, what is your problem? Like, why are your hands all sweaty? I'm so nervous, I'm about ready to pee down my own leg. And it wasn't for money. It wasn't for glory. It was just the league night.
Right. You know?
So that is – there's a quote, actually, from Jesse Broadwater. This guy is – they call him the Freak Show. I don't know if you followed a lot of his stuff, but the guy is a legend. He's arguably one of the – most decorated, you know, professional archers ever. And he has a quote I actually found this morning. He said, archery is the ultimate test of skill, patience, focus, and discipline that you will never master.
It makes sense.
How true is that? Like, here's a guy that they call him the Freak Show Broadwater because the guy is capable of shooting 30x300s all day long. And he'll say that he's still working on things. His YouTube channel. He'll tell you, this is what I'm playing with right now to increase my accuracy. This is what I'm doing to try and get a little bit better. Like, this is an endless game. You're never going to beat this.
Right.
It's not like Pac-Man
uh-huh.
where you're going to beat it one day.
Right.
Or Mario Brothers, which is a terrible analogy because I'm not a gamer at all.
Right.
My wife has an old Nintendo. We were playing it the other night, which is like, I can tell you, the fourth time I think I've ever played Mario Brothers. And I couldn't get past the first level, and she thought it was hilarious. Okay, well, gaming's not my thing.
Uh-huh.
So we're going to move on.
Right.
But the archery is not a thing that you're going to, quote unquote, beat.
Right.
You know? And that's why target archery is kind of has its appeal for me because, like, I love to hunt. But how often do you get to actually pull a bow back at a live target?
Not very often. Maybe one, two times in 3 months.
Yeah. That's if you're hunting quite a bit.
Yeah.
If you have multi-species, like if you go kill a pig, you go kill a mule deer, and you get lucky enough to have a bull tag
uh-huh.
in your pocket. So you spend all that time shooting at foam, paper, getting ready for
right.
those moments. And it's exhilarating. I'm sure that if I could be paid to go hunt animals all the time as a professional hunter, I would love that. That would be the best job in the world. But everyone's a target archer, in a sense.
Right.
You know? You shoot targets to get ready for those events.
Uh-huh.
So at what level do you want to progress through? You know, if it's the paper plate at 30 yards and that is your goal, or if it's I want to shoot a perfect 330X, it doesn't matter.
Right.
You know what I mean? Archery's archery.
And right.
If you're there to have fun. That's why I enjoy hanging out with guys like Neil, you know, bear bow guy.
Oh, yeah.
Who will tell you that archery saved his life.
Uh-huh.
You know, he said that on multiple occasions. I love Neil to death. I think the guy is a stud. And to hear him say how much benefit he got from archery, I feel the exact same way.
Right.
I mean, there's a quote from Fred Bear about how archery clears the mind.
Uh-huh.
You know, and there's nothing that does that quite like shooting a bow and an arrow.
Right.
And there's something ritualistic about, you know, archery's history is mankind's history. That's
uh-huh.
another quote from
yeah.
him. So we all like the idea. Did you shoot archery in school? Do you
remember
that?
Not in school, but right after school, I got my first bow.
Yeah. So I remember shooting at the local, I think downtown, they had like a week in PE, you got to shoot bows.
Yeah.
I remember Boy Scouts programs had bows. There was opportunities where people get to shoot, and people like it. They like grabbing a stick and a string and an arrow and flinging it.
There's something about that.
There is. It could be that that's the way we first started killing stuff
a long time
ago.
Yeah.
And that's how we're wired, you know, that the hunter-gatherer side of us.
Right.
And I don't know if it boils back to that completely, but I think that there is this appeal to shooting stuff with a bow and arrow that's just, it's cool and it's fun.
Yeah.
And anybody can do it. You know, one of the things I love the most is going to the Arizona Cup down in Vegas and shooting in that every year. That is a qualifying event for the Paralympic team.
Okay.
So the guys are down there with missing arms, missing legs, wheelchair bound, and they're out shooting bows. And they have whatever modified alteration, that they need to shoot a bow. Like Matt Stutzman, the guy has no arms.
Right.
He shoots the bow with his feet. How cool is that?
And he's good at it.
He's dang good at it.
Yeah.
I've watched him. I shot next to him at the Arizona Cup, and the guy is a total humble stud. Like, He's cool if you pull his arrows, but he wants to carry him back.
Yeah.
You know, he doesn't want you to pull his arrows. If he can do it on his own, he will. He's totally self-sufficient, and you listen to him talk, and there's been oodles of videos and podcasts and interviews about the guy. He's easily found on the internet, but to talk to him real life, we actually saw him in Vegas 2 years ago, and my kids ran him down. And he'd actually just got done shooting. He'd just come off the line. And him and his significant other were actually walking, and my kids ran up and caught him, and they asked for an autograph. He quit everything he was doing, set everything down off his shoulders. Yeah, I don't know if it was his wife or his girlfriend, whoever was there with him, but was you know, moving all the stuff around. And he went and found a chair, sat down, pulled the shoe off, grabbed a pen, and signed my kids' shirts.
That's awesome.
That's a stud right there. That's somebody who is, you know, he just got done shooting a qualifying round, so I'm sure he was, his nerves were shot for the evening, but he still took a minute to sit down. You know, my kids don't remember that forever.
Right.
You know, they'll remember, like, the dude who shoots a bow with no arms was cool enough to stop for a minute, you know, and give us an autograph on their t-shirts.
Yeah.
They're not going to forget that.
No.
That's why I love archery, because you go to Vegas, you go to the Arizona Cup, you go to these big events, and it's not like when you go to an NBA game and you might get 30 yards at the closest to a professional basketball player.
Mm-hmm.
You go to these events, you're standing next to these people.
Right.
The, you know, the line from professional archer to amateur is blurred. You're competing together.
Right.
So you can ask them questions. You can hang out. You can ask them about their families. You can ask them for tips and tricks. I remember I was watching Real Wild at the Arizona Cup 1 year. A guy was talking to him about his release, and Real's like, let me see it. So this kid pulls out his release and hands it to him, and Real's kind of tinkering. He's like, maybe you should try this, this, and this, and hands it back to him. So that's a professional tip from a guy who's getting paid to shoot.
Right.
You know what I mean? That he loved doing. So when's the last time you watched that happen, like, at a professional football game?
It doesn't happen.
Nope. The professionals are so far removed from the everyday fan.
Right.
They don't get that experience.
Yeah, and, you know, the podcast is still young, okay, I understand that. But, like, when I talked to Tom, I talked to Neil, you know, even Matt and I talked about it, whatever. There is no sport on the planet that has the camaraderie like archery does, and if there is, I will kiss your ass.
I 100% agree with you. 100% agree. I have said multiple times, the archery people are their own breed, man.
They are.
And it's salt of the earth kind of people.
Yep.
I feel like archery is kind of the sport for somewhat the misfits. You know what I mean? People are like, I wasn't the football player jock in high school.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, I wasn't the most popular person, but I was athletic. And archery has that pull for some individuals because it's an individual sport. Nobody else is going to pull the string back and shoot for you.
Right.
But there is this, I'm here while you're conquering your personal goals with you, and so if I can help you, that's where the camaraderie comes from. And that's actually where Inside Out started. So Inside Out is a club that my wife and I started a few years back, and where that came from is we wanted a place bigger than what was offered, you know, through Stewart's Shop, because he only had a couple lanes, and we wanted more space for people to shoot, but we wanted to start that environment for kids.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, there wasn't a kids' league offered. And, you know, my oldest is 9 years old at the time. She was really wanting to shoot. She still shoots now. But I wanted to create an environment for kids to experience that.
Right.
You know, because I'll tell you, we started that as an archery club. We shot every Thursday night down at the fairgrounds. And, you know, due to COVID and some other extenuating circumstances, we're not shooting indoors. We've kind of shifted to a 3D environment right now. But that's why we started it. And I'll tell you, some of the friendships we've made through Inside Out, like, these are long-lasting, lifelong friendships. You know, we're getting ready to go to Lancaster next month, January.
Uh-huh.
Neil's going with us. Dan and Gabby are going with us. My wife is going. This is a core group of us that have wanted to go to the shoot for a while. The Lancaster Classic is one of those. For me, it's like Vegas on the other side of the Mississippi.
Right.
Outside of Las Vegas, it's the biggest indoor tournament that they host every year.
Mm-hmm.
And we've wanted to go to that. We always watch their Lancaster shoot-up that they have on YouTube every year. And we wanted to go. And so this is the first year that I was out of school and we were able to go. And, you know, I asked my wife, well, are we just the two of us going to go? She's like, absolutely not. We're going to reach out to our group. I'm like, who wants to go?
Right.
You know, and a lot of the people from our core group of Inside Out, you know, like, we're all going to go together. And I think that's what's fun, man.
That's
like,
awesome.
We're going to get an Airbnb out there, and we're going to go hang out, and we're going to shoot archery for a few days in Pennsylvania, barring COVID doesn't shut us all down and cancel everything. But you're right. Like, archery creates this camaraderie, this friendship, this I want to help you. You know what I mean?
Right.
more than I've seen in any other sport.
Yep.
Because it's not a quote-unquote team sport, but it can be done in a team environment. But no one's going to shoot the arrows for you. They might help you score. They might help you with your equipment. They might help you tune. But you're out there trying to beat your own personal best.
Right.
You know, you're slaying your own dragons.
Exactly. And I love it when I come into Desert Archery, and ever so often there'll be kids in here. And it's brother and sister or friends or whatever, and they're just getting their bows. And I'm going to shoot better than you.
Right.
You know. And normally, it's if it's boy and girl, it's normally the girl.
Hands down. Yeah, absolutely.
But I get a kick out of it.
Kids are fun to watch shoot because I started as a little guy flinging arrows, didn't know what I'm doing. And you'll watch the fire start in some kids. Like, this is going to be their jam. This is their sport. This is what they want to do. Like they have found their niche. They're going to shoot. And it has done marvelous things for people. You know, we've been approached by parents who have told us, thank you for hosting league because my kid talks about this. They look forward to it. They want to come shoot this. And it has done amazing things for them.
Right.
Socially, you know, they have blossomed as individuals. They're now interacting, whereas they didn't as much before. That's invaluable for me and Corbin. My wife was the main driver behind starting like Inside Out and shooting at the fairgrounds on a weekly basis. She was the big driver behind this. And to see people come up and tell us, like, thank you for doing this. This isn't offered anywhere else. And at the time, there was no other options. Thank you for allowing my kid to have this chance to come learn a new sport that they otherwise wouldn't know. You mean, nobody's explaining, like, this is how you shoot an official game of scoring. This is how you write your score. This is how you have line etiquette when you're shooting. These are the things that kind of help train you in the sport and expose you to other people you otherwise wouldn't meet. So that part, like, I think that's awesome. I want kids to be shooting bows because it could potentially create doors for them. There's a guy named George Riles out of Georgia who runs the Archery Learning Center, big bow shop out there. And he's got a JOAD program that produces professional archer after professional archer. These kids come out of this JOAD program and they shoot at the pro level. Chris B has come out of there. Kobe Hanley, the guy who owns UltraView Archery Products. These are all kids that came out of this guy's programs. And so when I was looking, scouring the internet, looking for resources, like, who should I follow? Like, who should I listen to on how to get better? This guy's name keeps coming up, George Riles. So I went and found every seminar he'd ever had let recorded and put on the internet. I watched all of his YouTube videos. He's got a Thing a Week program on YouTube. And I watched them all. And I'm like, this guy, he's got it figured out. He takes these kids and turns them into professional archers. But I listened to him say something one time that stuck with me forever. He said, when people come into my shop and they shoot my league, I don't even talk to them about score or about being better at archery. I just let them shoot their bows. The kids that want to progress and be better, they come talk to me.
Right.
And they say, I want to be on Team Hornet. I want to join this archery team.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the kids that self-select to put themselves through the paces of becoming better and going through the growth curve. Otherwise, man, they're just shooting bows. They're just having fun. Like,
yep.
Not everyone walks in the door wanting to be like, I'm going to be the next Chris B. I'm going to be the next professional archer.
Right.
Because not all the kids want to do that. They just want to shoot bows and hang out with their buddies.
Yeah.
You know, because archery can induce so much personal stress on yourself while you're trying to compete. You're after that mystical 300 that they don't enjoy it anymore.
Right.
It's kind of like when you hear these kids that get into high-level gymnastics or whatever at a young age. You'll hear them talk about it later on in life. And like, I hated it. I got to where I didn't enjoy it anymore. And you'll hear George Riles talk about how he doesn't want that. If the kids want to get serious, then he gets serious with them. If they just want to come in and shoot bows, let them shoot bows.
Right.
You know, it doesn't matter what they score. It doesn't matter if they even hit the bale.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure my wood fence at my house has a couple arrow holes for my son because in the beginning it drove me nuts that he wouldn't anchor the right way, he wouldn't shoot the right way, but he was out there flinging arrows and having a good time.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? And that really was what was important, is letting them shoot bows.
Right.
You know, and enjoying the love of the sport. So that's why, you know, when you hear, you know, guys like you say, these kids are in the shop and they're flinging bows and they're kind of ribbing each other like, you know, I'm going to shoot better than you. That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's what gets them into the sport.
It is.
That's how they realize, like, I want to do this more.
Right. What's Road to Vegas look like?
That's a good question. So Vegas is the quote-unquote Super Bowl of archery, right? It's the biggest indoor archery event held in the United States. There's a couple other major tournaments, across seas. Like, there's the Kings of Archery tournament that happens in Europe every year, but Vegas is, people come from everywhere to shoot that thing. So for us in the Rowden House, because nobody's paying us to do this, we're not pros.
Right.
If I get a game in a day, then I'm off. I'm pretty happy. When I say a game, meaning I shoot six arrows at a time. I'll put up two pieces of paper and I'll shoot two full games. And then I'll shoot a couple cooldown arrows where I'm not even aiming. I'm just kind of shooting at the bale. If I do that every day, I'm not at work. I'm pretty happy. That's a pretty good shooting regimen. My wife drives me nuts because she won't touch her bow for a month. She'll take it down. She'll shoot a 296, hang it back up, and go finish dinner.
Oh, my wife's the same way.
Drives me bonkers. I'm like, if you put forth any effort into this, if you practice consistently at all, she would be phenomenal.
Right.
It drives me up a wall. I have to shoot pretty consistently in order to maintain a pretty competitive edge. Because like, if I don't touch my bow for a month, I can't come back and shoot a 299 game.
Right.
Like, I'm back to a 296, 295, 20X game. My wife will, she shoots archery like she plays golf. She picks the club that's pretty, not the club you need. So she can't tell you the brand of bow she shoots. She can't tell you the release. She can't tell you the arrows. She can't tell you the scope or stabilizer.
Oh, it sounds familiar.
Yeah. Like every other guy that's getting his wife into a sport like this. I hand her stuff and say, shoot this. Then she shoots a 290. It's like, is that good? Yes, that's phenomenal. That's an incredible score. So for her, her road to Vegas is, I'll shoot when I feel like it. That might be once or twice before Vegas.
Right.
Where I'm out there punching paper, you know what I mean, every day I'm off of work trying to get ready for Vegas. So two different roads, same end result.
Right.
For us, Vegas is, we stay at the South Point every year. This is our, I think, fifth time we're going to shoot Vegas. We stay there. We have our bows upstairs in the room. And then when we're not on the line, we have our bows in the room and we're back down to the shooting area and we're watching friends shoot. You know, we'll go back down and watch Neil and Gabby, JR and other people that come with the group to shoot, because it's also a trade show at the same time.
Right.
So you go walk all the booths. You get to meet the professionals. They shoot down in the main arena. So, you know, spectating is free at Vegas. It doesn't cost you anything. So there's so much to go and do. And there's an app, because the shoot is so big. You download the Vegas Shoot app and you can tell people shoot times. You can watch their scores update. Because when they're at the line putting in their scores, you can watch the scores update.
It's all live.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So what a lot of people don't know about Vegas, and this is what makes Vegas fun, is that you shoot 2 days. You shoot Friday, Saturday against everybody in your division. Like, I shoot open male. I don't shoot the open pro. So I'm shooting against everybody who is in my class, say the 1,500 shooters. At the end of day two, they score everybody top to bottom. And they go by a gross score, which is, say I shot a, you know, two 296s. They go by your X count and they rate you. They rank you from top to bottom, first through 1,500. Every 30 spots, they draw a line. And the people that are in your group, that's your flight. And so now on day three, you're only shooting against people in your flight. You maintain your score going into that flight. So depending on where that line was drawn, you may be at the top end of your flight. You may be at the bottom end of your flight.
Right.
The fun part for spectators is that as you're shooting your final day, they can sit and watch your ranking go up and down based on when the scores are put in. Because the archers are down there at the target bail putting in their score after each end of scoring. So that rank changes. It updates on the app.
Okay.
So like my mom and dad, they'll sit at home and they'll be like, Brad was in first. Whoa, Brad's in 17th. What happened? Like, now he's in fifth. Now he's in third. Like, what is going on? So being able to watch, that's what makes archery fun to watch for a spectator. Because otherwise, if you've watched a guy shoot one arrow, you have now watched him shoot entire Vegas. Because it looks the exact same.
Uh-huh.
Like, there's no difference. There's no, like, final last 3 minutes of the game.
Right.
When you're watching somebody, you can't tell if it's their first arrow or their 30th arrow. They look the exact same.
Uh-huh.
So as a spectator sport, it's hard to know what's exciting. But when you're watching the app and you're realizing, okay, going into the last end, Brad's in the top five. He has an opportunity, if he shoots this thing clean, to bump himself to the top of his flight,
right,
which means he's getting paid. As a shooter, I don't want to know where I'm at. As a spectator, it's exhilarating to watch. Because I remember watching Neil in his division, Barebow. Barebow is becoming this, like, the fastest growing, most exciting class of archery.
It is.
Target archery. A lot of guys are getting into it.
Yeah.
Whereas it wasn't really popular a few years back, but it's steadily growing, and now it's becoming this insanely popular that everyone likes to go watch. It's a class that is oddly becoming like widely accepted. Like, we're gonna go watch the bareboat guys. They hoot and holler, they yell out, they chant during. It's amazing to watch. You'll never find a bareboat guy who is depressed and sad.
Right.
They're all super stoked to be out there. I remember watching his scores update, and I was more nervous for him than I'm sure he was on the line, because I could see where his name was bumping up and down on that qualification, and Neil won money. That's awesome. He did very well in his flight. It's all luck of the draw when you shoot big classes like compound, because unless you're those top 30 guys, you could be in number one seat in your flight, or you could be in the 30th seat. It just depends on where that line is drawn.
Right.
So, like, one year, I had a really good shot at money. The next year, I am nowhere close to the top. And there's no way I'm going to catch those guys. And then you're just shooting for fun. Road to Vegas for me is, I have a goal of just making it into the first flight. I want to be in the top 30 guys. Every year I've shot Vegas, I've gotten into a slightly better flight than the year before. I think I made it into the 7th flight, and then I've made it into the 4th flight. So, but at Vegas, you drop an arrow, you're probably out of the first 2 flights.
Right.
You drop 2 arrows, you're probably out.
You're done.
Yeah, it's a weekend of perfection, they say. If you want to be in that top flight, the first 30 guys in the amateur class, you got to shoot 299s or above to get into there. That's hard to do.
Yeah.
You know, your tournament score will always be a little bit lower than your practice scores, because you're nervous. Your pulse is pounding. Your hands are sweaty. You're having a hard time holding onto your bow. You know, it's harder to aim when you're like that. The adrenaline's pumping. So you can't expect to perform like, in my backyard, I can shoot, 330X. I go to tournaments, I can't break 270.
Right.
that principle of you're going to perform worse under pressure.
Oh, yeah.
So Vegas is going to be huge for us. We look forward to every year going to that. Lancaster, I'm actually pretty excited about. But for me, I shoot as much as I can. If I can shoot a game on my day off, I'm pretty stoked. As I work at the hospital, so that means half the days of the month I'm there. And on those days, I don't get to touch my bow.
Right.
It's sad. I would love a 9-to-5 where I could get up and shoot in the mornings, but that ain't going to happen. So it's going to be interesting to see Vegas. My daughter, this will be her 3rd year shooting Vegas, my oldest. And
she's 9?
She's 9.
Mm-hmm. So for everybody that's listening, that is proof that anybody can shoot Vegas.
Yep.
At any, whatever age they accept. But at any age. I mean, there's 9-year-olds going to shoot at Vegas. And what was the payout last year for Vegas?
In the amateur division, I don't remember. I think the top flight paid like a couple grand, like $2,500 if you want it. The pro level, I mean, of course, the purse is like over $50,000.
Right.
But yeah, for the flight, if you are in the top 8 of your flight, you can make anywhere from, a couple $100 all the way up. So it depends.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if the kids even pay division, but if you're in the 22nd flight and you make it in the top 8 places, you'll at least win your entry fee back.
Oh, yeah.
A couple $100.
Yeah.
Which is awesome.
Yeah.
So a lot of people, I think Vegas got criticized for a long time. It's like, well, I'm going to go and I'm going to shoot against 1,500 other archers and I'm going to pay $150 to $175. There's no way I'm going to win money, because there's only a handful of guys in the country that can shoot clean 300s consistently.
Mm-hmm.
And those are going to be the guys that win the amateur money every time. So when the flights came out, that's a game changer, because unless people are sandbagging, which nobody wants to sandbag, because nobody wants to shoot in the, say, I won the 22nd flight.
Well, right.
You're a top, 2 or 3 flight kind of guy.
Right.
You ultimately get paired up with people who are at your level of shooting, and that's where people like my wife, and she made it into the 11th flight. That's not a female-male division. That's a everybody division.
Right.
So that means she outshot 20 other flights worth of people, men included, to shoot in that flight. So that's a badge of honor. Like, man, I got 8th place in my flight. That means I beat out a lot of other people, first of all, that didn't even make it to my flight. And then I beat the people in my flight. So it's a tournament against a lot of other people with an opportunity to get paid like any other sport I've ever seen.
Right.
Because historically it's like, if you didn't make first through 8th, you're last. It don't matter.
Oh, yeah.
So that's what's different about Vegas, that you don't get to experience any other place for people.
So how is Lancaster set up?
Lancaster is a little bit different. Something that's unique about Lancaster that I don't see anywhere else, I told you earlier that, you know, perfect score is a 300, mm-hmm. and then they just count your number of X's. So a perfect score would be a 300 with 30 X's. A respectable score is like a 298, 21 X. That's like, it's pretty solid shooting. Lancaster, they actually award the X a value of 11.
Okay.
So a perfect score is a 330.
Okay.
So it rewards the kind of guy that shoots, you know, if you're a guy that shoots 297 with 27 X's, you're rewarded for that effort compared to the guy that shoots, say, a 299 with 11 X's. I don't know how you do that. That's a lot of only hitting the big 10. But
right.
statistically speaking, if you're a guy who shoots more X's, you'll get rewarded for that on your score. So their scoring's different. A 330 is a perfect score. But what you do is you shoot a 60 arrow qualifier. And then on the last day, they take the top 64 or 32 of every class, and they actually shoot off against each other. They call it a shoot up. So 64 versus, you know, 63rd place, they shoot against each other. And I think it's a three-end, could be a three-end or a four-end shoot-off where they shoot four ends against each other. And then whoever wins that goes off against the next place up. And so the last day, they call it the shoot-up where they take places first through eighth, and they shoot up. Eight shoots against place number seven. The winner of that shoots against place number six. The winner of that shoots against place number five. That's broadcasted on YouTube every year. That's actually a lot of fun to watch. There was a kid who shot in the amateur division. It was either last year or the year before, where this guy wasn't a sponsored shooter. He's just an amateur. Came in with a button-up Oxford shirt, and he shot his way all the way up through the amateur class from the bottom to the top and won it. The internet was going nuts.
Right.
They kept calling him the CEO because he was wearing just a button-up. He wasn't wearing a shooter's jersey. He didn't look the part of a guy who was about to win the amateur class at the Lancaster Classic. But we watched that happen on YouTube. I'm like, this guy's going to run it. He's going to shoot from the bottom, whatever he was, eighth place. He won every match he shot against. And it's a stage production. They've got, you know, lights, cameras. They've got the targets down there. They have people who pull your arrows for you, and they have judges. So they've got a guy with a microphone shoved in your face asking about your equipment. He interviews you. So that's fun to watch. So Lancaster is its own ball of wax. I probably don't have a chance of making podium. It would be fun. I'd be way too nervous to compete at that level. But, you know, these smaller divisions, like my wife definitely has a good shot. Neil has a good shot of getting on the podium at Lancaster. I don't like to tell them that because I think it makes them nervous. But they very definitely have an opportunity to do it. So that's why we want to shoot Vegas or Lancaster. Lancaster is about half the size of Vegas.
Okay.
So if Vegas has 3,000 shooters, you can expect Lancaster has about 1,500 competitors.
Right.
Which, if you go to a tournament with 1,500 other people, that's a lot of people packing around bows.
Mm-hmm.
That's why it's fun to go to Vegas. You walk into South Point Hotel, if you've ever been there, it's typically a rodeo-type event. And all of a sudden, there's like 3,000 bows being carried around. You're like, what is going on in here? you got there's just bows like laying on the edge of the hallway, you know, and people got their equipment. And there's those recurve guys have $3,000-$4,000 in equipment.
Uh-huh.
And they just have them kind of chilling. Yeah. You go walk past the oyster bar and there's a bow sitting there. You're like, whose is this? So I can only imagine how it looks for non-archers that just happen to book a night at the South Point on the night of Vegas. Like, what is happening here?
Right.
Like, this looks very weird. You know, people are rolling in with what looks like gun cases and they're really full of bows. So I can imagine how that looks for people. But it's fun, man. Even if you don't shoot Vegas, it's worth going. It's worth going and spectating. Walking the trade show, because, you know, Hoyt, Matthews, Elite, all the major brands are there. They all have their, like, you can shoot the top bows, you can interview the pros, they're at the tent. And then archery is not that big, so you get these smaller companies that are trying to make a name for themselves. You know, they're out there and they have their booth and they're, you know, selling their $2 gadget right next to like a major brand company.
Right.
Like, you know, the Matthews booth is giant.
Mm-hmm.
But then you got a guy around the corner who's selling, you know, like homemade fletchings. It's awesome. So you get to talk to all kinds of folks about archery, from traditional to recurve to, you know, barebow to compound. It's just one big group of people who love archery.
Right.
You know, and I don't know, me personally, I've never ran into somebody that I did not know and visited with them in Vegas and didn't like them by the time I was done with the conversation. Like, these are just good people. I remember a couple years back, there was a lady whose luggage didn't make it with her on the plane ride over. And this guy was going around to all the major companies and saying, hey, this lady doesn't have a rig to shoot. What can you donate for the weekend? Like, Matthews gave her a bow. I'm pretty sure Doinker Stabilizer said she can use a set of our bars. you know, Excel said, hey, give her one of our sites to run for the weekend. Here's a release. They basically hodgepodged a rig together for this girl to shoot for the weekend. She shot it for the weekend and they gave all the stuff back. You know, but that was phenomenal.
That's right, awesome.
There was no reason why these companies needed or they weren't committed to do that. But they wanted this poor girl to shoot, you know, and her bow never showed up.
Right.
You know, and that happens a lot. There's a lot of Facebook pages, you know, archery pages you can follow. And all the time I watch those pages and people be like, man, I made it to Vegas, but my sight's busted. Or I made it to Vegas, I didn't bring my release. Can anyone help me out? And it's amazing how many people are like, dude, I got a spare. You know, message me. I'll get with you. It's a community of people trying to help each other out.
Yeah.
I don't know how many times I've been on the line. And, you know, people have equipment failure. They'll step off the line and people like swarm them. Like, what do you need? Like, I have a set of D-loop pliers. I've got some D-loop material. This guy's like, I got a lighter. We can put a new D-loop on. I can fix your peep. That happens all the time. And that's why I always carry a kit with me in Vegas. Like, you never know what's going to go wrong. But right. How many people just come out of the woodwork to be like, what's the problem? How can we help? That's cool.
Yeah.
Like, you don't see that at other major events.
No, you don't.
So.
You don't. It's its own breed of people.
Yeah. I don't know that I've ever met people quite like archery people. You mean they're their own cut, but it's pretty cool. It's pretty cool. And that's why when Stuart Bowman died, there was no bow shop in town. You know, Desert Archery 2.0 hadn't started yet. And there was this
Desert Archery 2.0.
that's what I reference this place all the time.
Right.
Which I am super grateful you guys are up and running. But when this hadn't materialized yet, I had already shot for Elite. And I reached out to them and said, hey, there's no bow shop here. I don't want to be a bow shop, but there's people, there's a need, there's no bow shop around here. What can we do to get a dealership up and running? And it was amazing. Every company I talked to said, we don't do home shops, we don't do garage shops anymore, you have to be a brick and mortar place, but we're going to call you back. And so Elite called me back and said, all right, you know, you seem well connected to the community, what can we do to help get this going? And so they were way cool. Like, they could have told me no and we could have been driving to Vegas and Phoenix to get people into archery. And really what we were just trying to do was keep archery going
right in
the Kingman area until something else had happened. Because, you know, people ask me all the time, Brad, how come you didn't start your own shop? And I was 12 months from being done with my master's in nursing as a nurse practitioner. And that's a hard sell to the wife that, like, hey, I'm going to open up a bow shop, you know, and not. So she was like, no, you're going to finish. So obviously I finished school and, you know, this is something I was doing on the side. And like I was telling you earlier, you know, Inside Out has kind of turned into this little gremlin under the counter that's this self-sustaining, you know. Like, I remember right before I took my boards, I was tuning a bow the night before, you know, listening to a lecture on, like, blood pressure medication. My wife's like, what are you doing? Why are you taking your boards? Like, I'm like, I gotta get this bow done, you know? So, yeah, so I was happy to see that, you know, bow shop opened back up in town, and there's a resource for people to go down and to pick up a bow and try it,
right.
You know, because our specialty, our niche for Inside Out and our archery club is 3D events, which we've shut down for the winter, but after the first of the year, our goal is monthly events. We've paired up with the Long Mountain Event Center. We're doing archery shoots out there. And right now, these are just fun shoots. You show up, you pay your money. We do a raffle with every entry. And, you know, we have 30 targets that we set up. People come shoot 3D archery for fun. They can make it competitive for themselves. We love competitive 3D archery as a family. My family really enjoys it. But in the wintertime, it's a hard sell.
You know,
out there in the wind and the cold, you know, and our big thing is we want to get families out there shooting.
Well, and you got hunting season going on too.
Yeah. How many people, like, and if you're in broadheads, you don't want to go make any changes. And obviously you're not shooting 3D targets with broadheads.
Right.
You know, that's not, it's way too expensive to allow that to happen. So, you know, these hunts, I can't seem to draw an elk tag to save my life. You know, I have the, I don't know what the Bambino curse is in baseball, but I feel like it's applicable to my ability to draw an elk tag. I can't. I don't know. I think I'm at 9 bonus points now for elk. So I'm waiting to eventually pull a decent bull tag. But, after January, February, the indoor season starts winding down. Vegas is over. Lancaster's over. Then we'll be back to monthly shoots.
Right on.
And that's it. I don't want, for right now, a high pressure environment for people to come out. You know, if it's their first time, come out, ask questions. How do I score a 3D target? We'll show you. We'll explain the 3D etiquette, kind of how you do 3D archery. Because it's kind of like golf except with a weapon.
Right.
You know, you get to, there's a stake, you judge your yardage, you can shoot it as known or unknown distance. You make your shot, you go score your arrow, you pull your arrow, go to the next one. And, you know, people will be out there goofing around, shooting more than one arrow, hanging out with their buddies, making side bets. You know, it can be as fun or as serious as you make it.
So, right. Okay, guys, we're going to wrap it up tonight. This will be the end of episode 5. We had some technical difficulties on our end. So, Eat Sleep Archery wants to thank Brad for coming out and talking target.
Thanks for having us, Ross. It was a pleasure, bud.
Yeah, I really appreciate it. Again, Desert Archery, Kingman, Arizona, 4020 North Sierra Road, Kingman, Arizona. Appreciate you guys. Thanks.